Welcome to The Moth. I'm Jodi Powell. I love a feel-good story, a story where things work out in the end that leaves a smile on your face. In fact, I'm hosting a Moth Radio Hour episode filled with feel-good stories that will drop in a few days. So definitely take a listen once it's out. But for this podcast episode, I wanted to do something a little different. Instead of feel-good stories, maybe something that leaves a crumb of bittersweet. Joy with some shadow in it. Don't worry, these stories aren't despairing. They are stories about the strange mess and pettiness and confusion of being human, and the dark humor to be found there. So ready to find the good in feeling bad? First up, this story from Austin Butterfield, who told this at a Denver Story Slam, where the theme was happy. Here's Austin, live at the Moth.
So I walk into my office and all of my stuff is gone. And that seemed unusual. And so I texted my boss, who happens to also be one of my really good friends, and I said, "Hey, bud, did I get fired?" And he texted back, "No." Then the next text said, "Why do you keep asking me that?" I do ask him that a lot. I just took a picture of my office and sent it to him, and he goes, "Just sends that one emoji that's like the face with the teeth that's just like, mm." That was it. And then I said, I sent the emoji that was just like the shruggy shoulder, like, huh? And he goes, "Didn't we tell you that the hospital was deciding to give your office to someone else?" And I was like, no, you didn't. And so I asked, like, who's taking over my office? And he goes, just someone. The hospital made a new direction. I was like, okay, you can come live in the basement with us. It's about a 10-minute walk from where you work, but it's fine. And then I found out they gave my office to the therapy dogs. And that sounds funny, mostly because it is, but it's worse because I'm actually an emergency psychiatrist. And they're not even real therapy dogs. They're just really cute and friendly golden retrievers. And I, metaphorically, am a really friendly and hopefully cute golden retriever. At least that's what the social workers tell me. When I tried to tell them, when they asked me what animal represents you, and I was like, "I'm a bear." And they were like, "Really?" And they didn't quite get the gay joke. They're like, "No, you're like a golden retriever, like a really food-driven golden retriever." And I was like, okay. So I go to the basement 10 minutes away from the emergency room while I'm trying to help kids in crisis. Even though who wasn't helping those kids in crisis? The therapy dogs. And so I went home that night and I was a little bit salty, which was not very golden retriever. And this was also the time in my life that the other things weren't going really great. I was like right in the middle of like the worst breakup. It was 6.5 months into the pandemic and my relationship of 12 years had just ended. I was like, oh man, I need a treat. Which didn't help me not feeling like a golden retriever. Because some people, their treats are cheesecake, and some people, their treat is wine. My treat happens to be Kelly Clarkson videos on YouTube. Which is amazing. Kellyoke. Look it up. It's good. Because she sings things. She, like, sings Whitney Houston, and she's like, she wants to dance with somebody. I was like, you could dance with me, Kelly. And so I'm watching the videos, and if you know YouTube, you know that sometimes you have to watch ads, and you get the 5, 4, 3, 2, and you click in the right hand, and you do pay attention to the ad at all, and then you just get to watch more Kelly Clarkson. Well, YouTube, in the middle of the pandemic, decided they were going to start making you watch full ads. And they made me watch 15-second ads. I was like, that is, I don't know if the cost-benefit ratio, but I want to watch Kelly. And so then they made me watch a longer ad. And it was like 2.5 minutes. I was like, this is longer than Kelly singing Alanis Morissette. And worse, it was an advertisement for straight guy soap. And I was like, Google, you have all my information for so long. TiVo figured out I was gay in 2004. And I know that because they kept recommending every show on Bravo. And I was like, you don't know me, TiVo. I do want to watch that. And so I watched this ad, and I'm like, you're oppressing me. You don't even understand. Like, you don't even know me. And I didn't want to like this ad, but then there was like this funny guy, and I respect comedy. And then they also had this really handsome guy, like lumberjack chic, which is like a fully masculine top, like a button-down flannel, right? And he goes, he doesn't say anything, which makes it even better. Just the comedian says things. And so I was like, I'm mad, but I kind of know that I'm not going to be mad because I'm still a golden retriever. And so like then I watch my Kelly Clarkson video, I forget about that, and then I keep going, and they make me watch that ad again. And this time I find myself being like, actually, I'm kind of in this. And so I ordered the straight guy soap. And so now I have another treat, aromatherapy, and I was like, this isn't CBT, but it feels great. And now, if this is what it smells like to be a straight guy, I'm like kind of rocking it. It's kind of awesome. It's very nature. It's almost too much nature for me, but like I'm into pine now. It's fine. And even though I was in the middle of a breakup and I lost my office to the therapy dogs, I realized my life is amazing and I'm moving forward in a way where I can have all the treats that I want. Thank you.
That was Austin Butterfield. Austin was born and raised in Colorado. Despite being a Colorado enthusiast, Austin prefers to appreciate nature in 4K rather than being physically present in the great outdoors. His love languages are caffeine, sugar, and stories. Every year I go to Jamaica for Christmas, and every year I come back to New York full of good food, sunshine, and I always feel a little invincible. About 4 years ago, my first day back, I float out of my apartment, train comes right on time, like it was waiting on me personally. That was a sign. We pull into the tunnel and within seconds, the few of us in the train realize we are not alone. There is a rat, loose, running free like, where do I sit? What follows is what I could only describe as shameful, a type of loss of dignity. The man a few seats down, the woman with her fancy lunch kit, the kid who is late for school, all of us on our seats, squealing, praying out loud, like, please don't let the rat jump up next to me. We roll into the next station. Our rat friend casually deboards, like it's going shopping. And then the next train operator comes on at the intercom and gives us a proper cussing out about our behavior. How we should be more bold and somehow fight the rat, I guess. Blah, 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 we all ignore him. I cannot remember the last time I laughed as hard and was as terrified with a complete set of strangers. And I think, it's good to be back in New York. After the break, a story about finding humor while grieving. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Our next story is from Tori Shineman, who told this at a New York City story slam where the theme was vices. Here's Tori, live at the mall.
We were best friends. We were in love. We had an epic run. We took New York City by storm. And then one day, it's 4th of July weekend. He's visiting his parents. It's his dad's birthday. And out of nowhere, he drops dead on a Tuesday afternoon. He was 41 years old, and I did not take his death well. I struggled for a really long time. After the funeral, I went and I stayed with his family for a few days in New Jersey. It was his mom and his dad and his sister, Lauren, and me. And he lived in New York. He had just moved into a new apartment, like just moved. All of his stuff was still in boxes. And Lauren and I, we drive back and forth from New York to New Jersey, and we move out all of his stuff from his old apartment, and we unload everything into the garage at his parents' house. And there's so much stuff in this garage. And we realize, like, somebody's going to have to go through all these boxes, right? Figure out, like, what to keep and what to donate and what to throw away. And we don't want his parents to have to deal with this. And so Lauren and I agree we're going to do this together. And so we team up, and we post up in the garage at his parents' house, and one box at a time, we start sorting through all of these different pieces of his life. And every box is just, it's full of memories, right? Like all of these old childhood keepsakes, old journals. I find concert tickets from shows that we'd seen together. I find every gift I'd ever given him. I find every letter I ever wrote to him. He saved them. And then we open this box, and it is full of porn. Like, so much porn. Like, stacks and stacks and stacks of DVDs, and it's weird shit, and I'm like, Jesus. And me and Lauren, like, we are heartbroken. We have been crying for days. And we open up this box of pornos, and we both just burst out laughing. And we take a break from the job, and we flip through the stack, and we're reading the titles out loud to each other, and we are laughing, and we're crying, and it's just the most ridiculous thing. And it's this moment of comic relief amidst all of this grief. And then we have to figure out, like, well, what are we going to do with all these pornos? Right? And it's not like, I mean, his parents obviously don't want them, and I don't want them, and she doesn't want them. But I'm like, but somebody out there would really want these, right? Like, I'm sure there is somebody who would really like and appreciate this giant box of DVDs, but it's not the kind of thing you bring to Goodwill. And I, like, we're debating this. I'm like, and I just can't figure out, I'm like, how do you find the person that wants your dead boyfriend's porn collection? Like, I can't wrap my head around that at this moment in time. It's just too much for me to bear. And eventually we decide, let's just throw them away. And we take this giant box of DVDs and we dump them into a big black trash bag. And it's done. And we kind of shake it off, you know, catch our breath, and we go back to, like, sorting through all of these boxes. And it's more boxes, and there's more clothes and more love letters. And then we find more porn. Like, there's another stack of DVDs in another box, and we both start laughing. And this goes on. For 2.5 days, we go through these boxes, and every couple hours, one of us will find another stack of pornos. They are everywhere. And it's like literally days full of, like, sentimental, nostalgic grief with intermittent bursts of laughter every time we find a stack of pornos. And I feel bad, you know, like, I feel guilty. Like, he would be so embarrassed, like, that his little sister and his girlfriend are, like, looking through his porn collection in his parents' garage. But we didn't try to find them, and I, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, we're not judging him. It's just the most ridiculous thing. And we keep going through these boxes. So home stretch, we're almost done. There's only a couple boxes left. And sure enough, Lauren finds another stack of DVDs. And she hands them to me, and I'm about to throw them in the garbage. And she says, well, you know, maybe you should keep one. You know, to remember him by. And I laugh, like, yeah, right, like, totally, I should do that. And I throw them away, right? But then I start thinking, I'm like, God, like, this is almost over. You know, like, in a couple hours, we're going to bring all the boxes to Goodwill, and we're going to bring all of these garbage bags to the dump, and I'm going to drive home, and it's all going to be gone, and this is all going to be over, and maybe I should keep one. Like, just one to remember him by. And it's funny because, like, it was Lauren's idea, but now I'm embarrassed about it because, like, I'd passed up that moment. And so I wait for her to be on the other side of the garage looking the other way. And I stick my hand into the garbage bag and I fish out one of these DVDs and I stuff it in my backpack. That was 7.5 years ago. I still have this DVD. I have not watched it yet. But who knows, right? Like, maybe one day I'll be feeling just that right mix of emotion. Bust out Sluts, Virgins, and Twins number 6. Pop that sucker in and rub one out. Thank you.
That was Tori Shinneman. Tori is a behavioral scientist by training, educator by calling, and an artist at heart. Her creative work blends personal narrative and social commentary, inviting audiences to think, laugh, and reflect. Tori's recent solo show, Multifaceted, explores living as both a scientist and artist. I loved the way Tori was able to find humor in a sad time and gave us the permission to laugh with her. That brings us to the end of our episode. We hope that you too are able to find the joy, even in the bad times, and maybe even laugh a little.
Jodi Powell is a director and educator at The Moth who enjoys listening to and seeking stories from beyond the main corridors. Originally from Jamaica, she currently lives in Harlem. This episode of The Moth Podcast was produced by Sarah Austin Jeness, Sarah Jane Johnson, and me, Mark Solinger. The rest of The Moth's leadership team includes Gina Duncan, Christina Norman, Marina Cluche, Jennifer Hickson, Jordan Cardinale, Caledonia Cairns, Kate Tellers, Suzanne Rust, and Patricia Ureña. The Moth Podcast is presented by Odyssey. Special thanks to their executive producer, Leah Reese-Dennis. All Moth stories are true, as remembered by their storytellers. For more about our podcast, information on pitching your own story, and everything else, go to our website, themoth.org.